Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
the Elm Street Group at Morgan Stanley, working with clients to create enduring financial value and a lasting impact through sustainable investing solutions. A local wealth management team with global insights. Find out more at the Elm Street Group at morganstanley.com.
And by Antioch University New England, offering doctoral degrees in clinical psychology, environmental studies, and marriage and family therapy, as well as master's degrees and certificates. antioch.edu/nhradio.
And from Dartmouth Hitchcock, imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community. With convenient locations throughout northern New England, world-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The New Hampshire House this week approved a bill establishing a paid family and medical leave program. But the bill is far from becoming law. The measure now goes to the Commerce Committee, where it'll face tough questions about its impact on employers and on state finances. Concerns raised this week by lawmakers like Republican Keith Murphy, who also owns a bar in Manchester and who spoke on the House floor.
You're voting to impose a 1.5% income tax for the purpose of funding a new paid medical and family leave program. To be administered by 45 new state employees.
New Hampshire's family leave proposal has a different financial structure than those in other states, leading opponents to worry it's not sustainable. But supporters say paid family leave is an idea whose time has come, and that the alternative funding approach might just be the perfect New Hampshire way. We find out more today in The Exchange, and let's hear from you. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or call in 1-800-892-6477. And we begin the hour with Mary Guile. She's a Democratic state representative from Concord and sponsor of the bill we're looking at, HB 628. And Representative Guile, welcome back to The Exchange. Good to have you.
Good morning, Laura. Nice to be here.
How long have you been trying to get family leave passed in New Hampshire, Representative Guile? I feel like this is not the first time we've talked about this.
The journey started in the year 2000 and consists of a number of bills and a lot of meetings and forums and summits, involving discussions by all the parties that might be involved. In 2010, a bill was introduced to the Commerce Committee, and the Commerce Committee voted to send the bill to interim study with the recommendation that it be included for future legislation, contingent on an actuarial study. And at that point, it really took on a very different task, and that was to look at an actuarial study that would, in fact, study this, what would be needed. What the Commerce Committee
wanted to know was... The financing of it. That's what you mean, Representative
Pardon?
Guile? The financing of it?
The financing of it, but also what would be needed in terms of participation, employee participation, what were people willing to pay to, this is a benefit that is being offered as an option to employees, and what would they be willing to pay, and so on. So the actuarial study was completed in the fall of 2016, and that was the basis for the current bill.
So how surprised were you by this vote in favor, 183 to 151?
Well, Laura, I have to say the amount of work that was done on this bill was incredible. Starting with the campaign for family-friendly economy, which you will hear about in a few minutes, but also the efforts of the Republican members on the Labor Committee. There were several who really understood what's going on in families today and the importance of having paid time off versus, FMLA, which is only available to people who work in companies with 50 employees or more.
FMLA, by the way, Family and Medical Leave Act. That's the federal
law.
Yeah. So, and pardon me for interrupting there. Just wanted to clarify, FMLA, Family and Medical Leave Act. That's the federal law.
Yes, that is the federal legislation.
Sure. So lots of concerns did come up, as you know, Representative Guile, chief among them, the financing. I want to play a little clip for you from Republican lawmaker Keith Murphy, who we heard just a moment ago. He and others have said that even though this is funded by voluntary contributions from employees, the 0.5% contribution that the bill calls for will not be enough. Let's hear from Representative Keith Murphy.
What happens when there's a shortfall? The bill is silent, but one thing is certain, the fund never will go away. We'll have to get the money from the general fund or raise the tax or go to the employers, but mark my words well. In 5 years or less, this legislature will be asking how to bail out this fund because the 0.5% will not be enough money.
So, Representative Guile, what do you think about that? It's not just Representative Murphy that has that concern.
Of course, money is always a major concern in New Hampshire. The actual actuarial study indicated that the employees, the New Hampshire respondents to the two surveys indicated that they were willing to pay 0.5% of their weekly wages. I'm not sure what Representative Murphy meant by 1%.
He said also, 0.5% Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, 0.5%. I'm also, the amendment to the bill included an oversight committee to the entire program so that there would be oversight and a constant monitoring of the implementation steps required in putting in a bill of this nature. This bill in particular involved a lot of work since last spring, since the summer of 2016, actually, working closely with Department of Employment Security to find out all of the systems that they are already using to gather unemployment insurance and to make sure that whatever we were proposing could be aligned.
So you feel like you've crunched the numbers already?
We have crunched the numbers,
great detail.
And the amendment also, while it does include a fiscal note, it does say that it anticipates that in 10 years the program, the paid family medical leave program, would be able to repay the state the amount of money that was used initially.
A couple last questions for you, Representative Guile, and then we'll get to our guests in the studio. Does this bill include job protection for someone who has to take a family or medical leave?
Of course, for those employees in companies that work in companies with 50 or more employees, they do have job protection.
Under the federal law.
We did not include job protection in this bill because we know that New Hampshire consists primarily of small businesses, and it's not easy to do. Employers that are already offering family medical leave, smaller employers, do work out some kind of job protection on their own, but it is not included in the bill.
Well, I wanted to ask you that because I did just get an email from Kirsten in Portsmouth who wanted to know about job protection. So, Kirsten, thank you for the email.
We debated quite extensively, Laura, and felt that because we wanted to attract small businesses nationally, small businesses are 70% of small businesses support a publicly funded family medical leave program. But that in New Hampshire that may not be the sentiment, and so we wanted to make it a little more employer friendly.
One more question for you, Representative Guile, and again, we really appreciate your time. What's your next move to keep this bill going, and what are your hopes? I have read that the Commerce Committee could be pretty tough on this bill.
Well, it could be, it will be heard in it will be heard in the Commerce Committee on Tuesday morning. They will be looking at it as an insurance program. And I'm hopeful that the people who came out to support it when it was presented before the Labor Committee worked very, very hard on this bill. They sent us a study and looked at it from many different angles. And I hope that the Commerce Committee will also remember that in 2010, as a committee, they recommended that this bill be included for future legislation, contingent on the actuarial study, which, of course, has been completed. I hope that they will also attend to the work that the Labor Committee did, which was very extensive and very intense, and hopefully pass the bill.
All right.
Perhaps with one or two amendments, but get it through and get it back to the House and then on to finance, where it will have to be deliberated again.
And then it goes to the Senate, which is a whole nother story. Representative Guile, thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it.
You're very welcome. And again, thank you for the opportunity, Laura. Enjoy the day. Bye-bye.
That's Mary Guile, Democratic State Representative from Concord and sponsor of the bill we're talking about, HB 628, for a paid family leave program here in New Hampshire. Join us with your comments and questions. The email is exchange@nhpr.org, exchange@nhpr.org. You can respond on Facebook or Twitter if you'd like. It's NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. With us for the rest of the hour is Amanda Sears, Director of the Campaign for a Family-Friendly Economy. That's a group that advocates for working families in New Hampshire. And Amanda, it's nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Laura.
And also with us, Stephen Schmidt, Republican Representative from Wolfboro, Chairman of the Labor Committee. And Representative Schmidt, good to have you, too. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, both of you, but Amanda, you first. Economists all say that New Hampshire's biggest economic challenge is finding great workers to fill the jobs that they have. How does this family medical leave bill fit into that broader effort?
Well, I think this fits directly into it, and it's one of the primary reasons for addressing this and for this being a priority. New Hampshire does have a workforce shortage. We have an aging population. We have one of the oldest workforces in the country, and we also have a shortage of young people coming here and making this their home and staying here to become part of our workforce. So this really helps. One of the ways it helps is by keeping aging workers in the workforce longer. When somebody is, you know, for instance, approaching retirement, but maybe has an injury or requires a surgery, if they have access to paid leave, the research in other states demonstrates that they're more likely to take the time they need to recover and get back into the workforce, prolonging their time in the workforce by up to a couple of years.
So if somebody's 63 and they have an accident and they're out for a couple months with paid family leave, you're saying, Amanda, they might go back in and give it another, you know, 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, and that's what the research in other states shows, is that it gives that incentive to say, well, you know, if they don't have it, they're more likely to say, you know, this might be the sign I was looking for to retire. I'll just stay home from now on. If they have access to paid leave, the research demonstrates that they're more likely to go back and work another couple of years.
What do you think, Representative Schmidt? Again, you're chair of the Labor Committee, so I'm sure you've heard this from businesses. You know, it's workforce, 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 workforce. How do you feel this family leave bill fits in or does not fit in?
Well, my opinion on it, Laura, is as you know, New Hampshire is enjoying one of the lowest unemployment rates in the country at the moment, almost full employment. Because of those things driving the workforce, about 35% of New Hampshire businesses now offer some type of benefit for family leave. So what's happening is free market forces are driving these benefit packages, and it's almost becoming, in my opinion, a self-fix, which I think if you believe in free market capitalism, ought to be the way it should go. New Hampshire's workforce is interesting. What we're looking at here is about 700,000 employees, non-farm and non-government. And of that amount, about 60% of them are in an age from 35 to 55. So
sort of prime working years.
Those are the prime working years, and those are the folks that probably don't need paid family leave as it's been expressed in the legislation. That is, women of childbearing age, Amanda referred to the elderly going, you know, frankly, in New Hampshire, the elderly in that category are a decreasing number of our workforce. So that's increasing.
So you don't see this as a retention for sort of older middle-aged workers?
I don't believe that will influence them one way or the other. If they choose to continue the work, they will. I don't think, my opinion, that this is a driver that's going to keep them in the workforce.
What do you think, Amanda? Others have said what Representative Schmidt said, that, you know, the private sector to some extent is already doing this, either through employers. Also, others have said that private insurance companies offer family and medical leave products that people can buy if they want it.
I would say that to Representative Schmidt's numbers, if you take the his numbers that 35% offer some type of paid leave that people can use, that still leaves 2/3 of the workforce without any access. And I think the numbers are actually a little higher than that. But taking that number, that means 2/3 of people don't have the ability, 2 out of 3, to take the time they need when something comes up. And the people we know who have less access are people who are lower income and women. They're people with more caregiving responsibilities and people less able to weather the financial insecurity that comes when you need to take leave without pay. And we know that that is a big driver for folks. The Federal Reserve Bank of Boston recently found that 47% of people don't have the resources to pay for an unexpected $400 expense that comes up. That shows us that people are really living paycheck to paycheck. And again, that's about half of people that can't come up with $400 for an unexpected expense. When you unexpectedly need to be out of the workforce for a caregiving need, you're going to miss more than that $400. You're going to miss the ability to make your car payments, the ability to make rent. So this really is a bill to increase the financial security of folks who don't have access to this kind of leave.
Well, I want to ask both of you about the financing, because one analyst said this is uncharted territory, that other states haven't done it the way that New Hampshire would do it if this were to pass. And that's a big if. But I also want to invite our listeners to join us. The exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. You can respond on Facebook or Twitter, NHPR Exchange. And let's go to Nancy in Manchester. She's on the line. Hi, Nancy. Go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you so much. Again, my name is Nancy from Manchester, New Hampshire. I'm calling because when I needed paid family medical leave, I was working in the restaurant industry, and my first son was born 8 weeks early, and he weighed 2 pounds, 10 ounces when
wow.
he was born. So he was put into the NICU, and I had to take additional time off, and I was recovering from a C-section, and I had to sit by his side while he was in the NICU the entire time. And I didn't have any paid leave or anything at that point. And that was my first time being pregnant. With my second son, Sawyer, who also was very premature, I was actually getting ready and I was trying to find short-term disability insurance. And I actually called places like Aflac and MetLife and State Farm to see about getting an individual plan for myself, because I know that my employer did not offer anything like that to me. The response I actually received was that they don't actually contract out with individuals on a short-term disability insurance. So once again, I was left without it. And then my second son, Sawyer, was born early again with more time taken off. And unfortunately, he passed away.
Oh, Nancy, I'm so sorry. How terrible.
This is one of the hardest parts of my life. And my husband also had a hernia at the same time. He actually went in for hernia surgery 2 days after our son passed away.
Oh, my goodness.
We didn't have that extra $400, $500 to spare for some of our utility bills. We ended up having some of our utilities shut off on us. And we also couldn't afford a funeral for our second son. So New Hampshire families absolutely need this. And there are a lot of families like myself that are in my age range, which is I'm 29 years old, that this is actually something that we all need and would actually make us go back to the workforce and be able to do things so we can actually contribute to society. So what is it going to take for New Hampshire to pass this bill? That's my biggest question.
Well, thank you, Nancy, for the call. And what a struggle. I'm so sorry to hear about that. I also got an email, Nancy, from Sarah in Concord, also has a child who seems to be severely ill. Sarah says, I'm writing to you from the Dartmouth Pediatric Intensive Care Unit, where my child is currently admitted. Good luck to you, Sarah. She says, the surveys are clear. New Hampshire families want and need paid leave. No one should have to choose between caring for a loved one and a paycheck. Sarah says caregivers are more likely to step out of the workforce. And once you're out, it is harder to tag back in. She says, with unemployment under 3%, we can't afford to leave individuals who want to work on the sidelines of our economy. Sarah says she's from Concord, but she's obviously in Lebanon at the moment at Dartmouth Hitchcock Medical Center. So, Nancy, thank you for the call. Sarah, thank you for the email. We'll tackle these issues after a short break. And we'll also hear from a small business owner, get his take on paid family leave. All that's coming up, so stay with us. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're hearing details about a proposal for family and medical leave here in New Hampshire. There's a bill that passed the House to approve paid family and medical leave, but as we're hearing, there are a lot of concerns, and the bill is far from becoming law. Just a reminder also, we're going to be holding a live taping of the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup tonight at the Barley House. Send us your questions and comments on the week's news right now, and then tune in tomorrow morning to hear a broadcast of that special event. You can send email to exchange@nhpr.org or respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. So Amanda Sears, Representative Schmidt, back to the topic of family leave. And we heard two comments just before the break, heartbreaking, people who really struggled with ill children. And in one instance, the child died. And during the break, Representative Schmidt, you said something to me that I've heard from a lot of other people, which is it's not the concept of family leave that you and others oppose. It's the details of this bill. So can you just give us a little bit more there, please?
Sure. Thank you, Laura. And we studied the issue exhaustively in the committee. We had a study committee and literally days of testimony and evaluation of the committee. So let me give you an example of what we're talking about. The bill calls for $5 per week or 0.5% of salary for the folks going in. And I think we're going to talk about the opt-out momentarily.
Yeah, it's not mandatory like it is in other states.
The $5, in my opinion, and with a majority of the committee, actually, was a good marketing tool. And that when it was sold to or proposed to be sold to employees, it's everyone can afford $5 per week for this great benefit. The problem with that is it frankly doesn't generate enough money that would compensate for the take rate. And the take rate would be the number of folks who would be anticipated to take the benefit during a given benefit year. Initially, when the legislation was proposed, they had a take rate of 14.1%, and that came out of the Carsey School down at UNH. When we got back out of the study committee, now the take rate had been reduced to 6.1%.
Take rate again?
The take rate would be the if you take the total universe of eligible employees that are in it, how many would actually use the benefit
sure.
in a given year, you know. The program fails at a take rate of 6.1%. You know, there just isn't enough money in it, you know.
And it's optional.
And it's optional. And that is another very significant issue with that. And I don't want to monopolize the time here. I think I see Amanda squirming here. But I really would like to talk about the opt-out, opt-in aspects of this.
Well, and here's the question about the opt-out, opt-in. And this has come up a lot, Amanda, as I'm sure you know. Let's say I run a company of 25 people and, you know, 20 people opt out, 5 people opt in. How can those people have their family medical leave paid for when 20 other people have opted out? I just wonder where the dollars are going to come from.
Yeah, well, I do think it's important to make this program work. And the analysis that was done for the state was an analysis that was done based upon the actual usage in other states and the costs of a program in other states that have this kind of a program modeled onto the New Hampshire workforce, to our demographics and the breakdown of our workforce. What they found with that modeling was that for a program that included everybody, that was 100% participation, which is what the bill originally called for, that program would cost an average of $5 a week for the average employee, and that would be sustainable. That would pay
for
if it were mandatory. And what they found, they also looked at voluntary participation. What they found is that if the rate of participation, for instance, dropped to 70%, the cost of the program then would be $6.70 per average per employee. They also modeled it down to 35% participation. So there has been analysis to look at how a program would function at different levels of participation. The program is modeled in the same way that other states are operating.
But they're mandatory, right?
But all the other states are mandatory. And so that's why knowing that New Hampshire has an ethos of, you know, we don't like mandates and, you know, it's a live free or die state, the analysis was done to look at different rates of participation. This bill is now going to two more committees. The Commerce Committee will be the next one to look at it. And so they, I am quite certain, and they have said that their charge will be to ensure that the program works with the changes that the Labor Committee made.
So other changes might be made? Is that what you're saying, Amanda?
I do believe that there may be other changes made in that committee to make sure that the program will be sustainable.
Financially
sustainable.
What changes would you like to see, Representative Schmidt?
Well, the change that I'd like to see in this legislation is no mechanism in this legislation that allows for an increase or a decrease should the program run a surplus or a deficit. What this legislation calls for is the formation of a commission which has no teeth. And basically the commission, as I understand it in the legislation, can go back to the full legislature and say, hey, we need more money. However, there's no mechanism to accomplish that. And anyone who's familiar with the legislative process understands how difficult that is. In the interim, the program goes on and people are expecting a benefit or whatever. This gets back to Representative Murphy's comments, which she made there,
That the legislature will be asked to bail this program out.
Exactly. But there's no mechanism in this legislation that gives the ability to raise the fees on the employees who are benefiting and participating. So as an example, if, as I believe and Representative Murphy believes, that the $5 per week fee will be inadequate, the question becomes, what if it goes to $10 a week actuarially or $15 a week? At that point, those folks who opted into this program in anticipation of $5 max out-of-pocket costs can't get out of the program.
Would you feel better about this if it were mandatory, Representative Schmidt? That seems to put it on a more solid financial footing.
I think from an actuarial standpoint and looking at the other four states, it's an insurance program. Insurance is really required on a full participation of those insured.
Would you feel better, Amanda, if this were mandatory?
Well, I do think that a mandatory program would, obviously offer all people the coverage that they need. I think that there are ways to make a program that is not mandatory work for New Hampshire, and I think that the modeling demonstrates that. And I think that it would be a friendly amendment in the Commerce Committee to address mechanisms that would allow for the program to be administered, for mechanisms to shift the parameters of the program within the Unemployment Advisory Council, which is the council that Representative Schmidt refers to, that would be charged with the oversight of this program. So I think that putting mechanisms in place to raise or lower the rates as we see how the program functions. Because in other states, what they've actually found is that the pool builds up over time and that they actually are running quite a bit of a larger balances than they expected with these programs.
Let's hear from a small business owner who also has some thoughts on this bill. And I also want to, again, invite our listeners to join us. The email address is exchange@nhpr.org, exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook or Twitter is great. It's NHPR Exchange. Or you can give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. With us now on the line from Center Ossipee is Matt Trahan. He's owner of Sap House Meadery in that town. And Matt, good to have you. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you.
So you've come out as a supporter of this paid family and medical leave bill. How would this benefit your business, in your opinion?
Yeah, well, I think that, the biggest issue for us being in particularly rural New Hampshire is trying to be competitive in getting employees to either stay in the area or relocate to the area, and particularly with benefits. So, I mean, I think that this would really kind of level the playing field and enable people that want to work in New Hampshire, and particularly more in, our rural part of the state, to do so, as opposed to, having to move elsewhere, down to Boston or elsewhere in the country.
So you see it as a workforce attraction and retention issue?
I mean, certainly as from a business owner's perspective, yes.
What types of employee situations can you imagine coming up at your company, Matt, that might be addressed through a program like this?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually really timely. We just had an employee that had to take about 6 weeks off for medical reasons. And we're lucky in that we were able to figure out on our end how to make it work, and they were able to figure it out kind of on their end how to do it. And, they were able to come back at the end of it. But The procedure was a preventative procedure, and it's not hard for me to imagine a situation where, you know, either we couldn't, you know, hang on to the position or deal with it for 6 weeks, but more importantly, they couldn't afford to take the 6 weeks off, and then that employee elects to not have the preventative surgery, and then at some point down the road, they're, you know, permanently disabled, and, you know, certainly as a person, but, you know, also as a business owner, 6 weeks is a lot better than permanent.
Yeah, then you have to find somebody new and train them and make sure they're okay, and you've got someone you like, so you kind of want to stick with that person. Is that
Absolutely.
What you're saying, Matt? Yeah. You know, one concern that's come up, and you may have heard this while you were on hold, is that this is the financing is a little questionable. Some have said that a 0.5% contribution won't be enough, especially since it's voluntary, not mandatory. How much do you share that concern that there might not be enough cash in the way that this plan is set up right now?
Well, I mean, that's probably a little bit out of my wheelhouse, you know, the economics of it. And I mean, that's why we've got the legislature kind of working through it. But, you know, it from my perspective, it doesn't seem like I kind of agree with the point that, you know, New Hampshire is probably kind of opposed to anything with the word mandate in it. So I understand from the, you know, trying to get people on board.
From a political perspective, sure.
Yeah,
well, another concern that's come up that we've heard from small businesses is that it's yet another regulatory headache. And I want to play just a little clip for you, please, Matt, of a lawmaker and fellow small business owner, Keith Murphy. Actually, you own a meadery. He owns a bar in Manchester. Here he is just talking about how this is yet another burden on small businesses. Let's hear.
It's a lot easier for large companies to deal with things like this. Large companies have HR departments and legal compliance to deal with things, but for my restaurants and their 120 employees, I am the HR department. Small business owners already spend a lot of time and a lot of money dealing with these headaches, and this is yet another straw upon our creaking backs.
Again, that's Republican State Representative Keith Murphy, who owns a tavern in Bedford. What do you think, Matt? Is this another pain in the creaking back for small firms like yours?
Well, I mean, I'm not one to, you know, comment on how anybody, you know, runs their business or feels about it. I mean, I think he said he has 125 employees. We, you know, including myself and my partner, we have 4 full-time and 1 part-time, maybe looking to bring somebody else on this year. So,
wow, so you're small.
Much smaller. And so we are, you know, I am certainly the HR department for our company. That was a question that I brought up initially, and it just doesn't seem like it's going to be that challenging. I mean, the way that, you know, payroll software works and all that, I don't see it as nearly that big of a deal. And I think that the value to us as an employer and, like, certainly to the employees of the state, I think it's just worth it.
Okay. Matt, thank you very much for being with us. We really appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thank you.
That's Matt Trahan, owner of the Sap House Meadery in Center Ossipee. Again, the number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. And Representative Schmidt, Amanda Sears, let's go right back to our listeners. Linda's in Nashua. Hi, Linda. Go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you. My question is, how do you avoid abuse of this program when if there's more than one or two in a particular place of business that wants to go out? How do you determine who goes, and are all employers required to let anyone go whenever they ask? And how do you fill these positions? We're dealing with a state that has a severe drug problem. I can see from an employer's perspective that this being a nightmare for employers.
Well, Nancy, thank you for the call. And to both of you, Representative Schmidt first, in the House debate on this bill, there was some fear expressed, like our callers, that employees might potentially game the system. How might somebody game the system, Representative Schmidt?
Sure, let me talk to that. And let me address the listener first. This legislation doesn't speak to that. What we have on the small employer, 50 and under, and the 25 and under, even though their employees may have signed up for this benefit, they have the potential to be fired for exercising the benefit. Now, that was not addressed in the legislation, and it could have been, but it was not. Let me talk about how the system can be gamed. You have a one-time opportunity to opt out. So initially, in this legislation, which I, one of the sillier things in it, it requires every piece of paper to be notarized for all employees. So that's, imagine that, that's 700,000 plus notarized documents for folks who might elect to opt out of this. So getting back to that question of the small employer and how it may be gamed, even though you can only opt out once, you have the ability to opt in on an annual basis thereafter. So to the smarter employee, I would think, it would make sense to initially opt out.
Save yourself the $5 a week.
Save yourself the $5 a week or $10 a week. And then if you're into family planning or whatever and you have the time, then on the annual basis, opt back in again. And
do you think that, people would operate that way?
Oh, I think people absolutely would operate that way. And I think when people come to and I get back to the $5 a week issue, and it's a fundamental issue here. New Hampshire employees are saying, well, $250 a year, I can do that. The other four states have a minimum contribution of 1%. New York is 1.2%. That's more than double the New Hampshire proposal.
Because it's mandatory, so they spread
across
everybody.
Not only that, because it's mandatory, because from an actuarial perspective, that's the amount of money needed to keep the program solvent.
So this gets back to my question, and again, you're chair of the Labor Committee, so would this be better if it were mandatory instead of this, you know, funky opt-in, opt-out option?
Well, you know, if I was drafting the legislation here and if I wanted the small business owner to have skin on it, I would involve them. I would give them the option of opting in to the program. That is employers of 50 and under. If they opt in, then employee protection should be offered and all along those lines. I think there's some real flaws in here. And like I told you earlier, I said I am not opposed to the concept of paid family leave. But this legislation, as written, is not going to get us there.
You know, Amanda, we keep going around and around on this concern that $5 a week with the option to get in or get out is not tenable. And I wonder what you think.
Well, I believe, as I said earlier, the actuarial analysis did look at different levels of participation. So if 30% of our workforce dropped out, you would need to raise the premium to about $6.70. So the difference there is not an enormous difference. To the caller's point about how to, you know, what would an employer's situation be if they had one to two people out at a time, for instance, we haven't covered the fact that this program would require medical certification so that somebody would need to, you know, wouldn't just say, you know, I think I need 6 weeks off. You would have to get medical certification demonstrating that from a physician's perspective, you need this time. And there's a 6 month pay-in so that people do need to have skin in the game before they're able to take time out for the from the program. And so there are mechanisms in place and to ensure that people have skin in the game and can't abuse it. And right now, you know, when you think about that there might be one or two people out at a time, that's what's going on for people, for businesses right now. If these are medically certified needs, these people are already out. This just helps them gain some financial security during that timeout.
All right. Thank you for that call. And we'll take a lot more after a short break. Also, lots of emails coming in. You can join them, exchange@nhpr.org. Stay with us. More on paid family and medical leave in New Hampshire in just a moment.
My name is Arielle. I'm calling from Derry.
My name is Elise. I'm from Alaska.
My name is Ina, and I'm calling from Brooklyn, New York.
From the Alaskan wilderness to the streets of New York City, NHPR Civics 101 is your guide to how American democracy works.
I had a question about term limits.
How does the Electoral College work?
Can you help me explain the National Security Council to my students?
Subscribe to the podcast and submit your questions at civics101podcast.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, paid family leave and where it stands here in New Hampshire. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Again, the email address, exchange@nhpr.org. We've been looking at a bill for paid family and medical leave here in New Hampshire. It passed the House recently, but still has a lot of work before it in the House before it might even go over to the Senate. Joining us to talk about this, Representative Stephen Schmidt, a Republican from Wolfboro and chair of the Labor Committee. Also, Amanda Sears, director of the Campaign for a Family-Friendly Economy. One more time, that email address is exchange@nhpr.org. Our phone number, 1-800-892-6477. And both of you, let's go right back to our listeners. Carlotta's calling in from Fitzwilliam. Hi, Carlotta. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, thank you.
Sure.
So I'm Representative Schmidt had questioned whether there was a need for this type of legislation. And I think what's important to know is that a lot of women in the workforce are part of the sandwich generation, where they have children and aging parents. And I myself, I'm 47 years old. I have a 14-year-old daughter, and also was caring for my mother recently. And the benefits offered by my employer in terms of sick leave were not sufficient to help me when I needed the help. My mom fell and broke her hip in February, and I ended up caring for her. And
so you're stuck between caring for a teenage child and an aging parent, Carlotta. And so
yeah.
You're thinking this would be helpful for
and
you.
Myself.
Yeah, right. I understand. I hear you. And what do you think, Representative Schmidt? You know, this has been sort of framed as a mom issue, fairly or not. But Amanda and our caller are both making the case that this could help a state with an aging population.
Sure. And I would say to the listener that certainly most of us on the Labor Committee, and, you know, let me be emphatic about it, we're not opposed to the concept of family leave. From a legislative perspective, what we actually have to do is get down into the weeds and see if it will work as proposed. And our opinion is that this legislation, as currently written, won't work. And that's where we're coming from on that one. This needs a lot of work.
What kind of work do you want to see on it, Amanda? I'm guessing nothing's perfect, and you'd like to see some changes as well.
Yeah, I do think details matter. And I would like to make the point that, while Representative Schmidt said that is the opinion of the legislature, I want to make the point that a majority of his committee in a 13-6 vote did support this legislation. And on this week, a majority of the House supported this legislation. So, in fact, there is majority support in the legislature for finding a way to get New Hampshire's workforce this benefit. And so with that level of support, I think that it's imperative on the legislature to answer some of these key questions. And there's a process in place to do that, where the Commerce Committee, which deals with insurance issues, will be digging into this issue next. And I think that, you know, as they dig into it, can look at the level of demand there is from the population in New Hampshire to figure this out and to figure out a way to make this work. And that way to make it work exists. You know, other states have this in place. New Hampshire can make it work. We have the systems, the structures from which to administer it. So I think that the imperative here is to in this next phase, answer the key questions, make amendments that will address the key concerns, and get to a place where we can offer this benefit for New Hampshire's workforce.
Well, here's a Facebook comment from Heather, and I'll throw to you first, Amanda, but want to hear from you too, Representative Schmidt. Heather says, I'm wondering how we can ensure a paid family leave program will be accessible to lower wage workers. Heather is a waitress. What do you think? Would this, if this were law, it would have to be taken up by all companies, no matter high wage, low wage, whatever?
Well, that is the current. The current bill would apply to all private employers,
no matter how big or small.
No matter how big or small,
or
and
high
I think
or low.
That's very important. Before the break, one of the One of the suggestions Representative Schmidt made is, why don't we just let employers opt in and decide if they want to participate in this? But what I think that would end up, what would end up happening there is you would still have a lot of employees who work for firms that don't opt in that would not have access to this. And I think that that would leave a lot of low-income people without the benefit.
So, Heather, thank you for the Facebook comment. So instead, and I'm just trying to super clarify here, Amanda, instead this bill says, no, all employers, you must offer this, but employees, you can decide to say yes or no. That's the difference.
It's a little bit different in the sense that it does allow an employer who offers a comparable benefit to opt out. So if an employer decided to self-insure or found a private insurance product that could offer a comparable benefit, they could opt out of the program. That would ensure that our workforce still is fully covered and would allow for employees to opt out, as the amended bill allows for, but would ensure that you don't have employers who just keep their employees back from being able to access this benefit.
Do you want to jump in, too, on the small, not small employers, sorry, lower-income employees, Representative Schmidt?
Yes, Heather's I can. Question. They would be covered under under this legislation here. But another issue of concern that this legislation really doesn't speak to is the issue of part-time employees.
Well, I was wondering about
that. And part-time employees will be paying into this, but I believe their opportunity to actually benefit from it because of the time restraints in the legislation are almost non-existent. So you're going to have a pool of part-time, most of them are probably low-wage participating. And not a great opportunity to benefit from their participation. I think that's a problem.
I was wondering about part-time workers. Also, tipped employees has come up as well. That's another question. Go ahead, Amanda.
I think that this program actually would be such an enormous benefit for part-time employees, particularly as many of them work at several part-time jobs and piece it together.
So they'd be eligible.
They would be eligible. And one of the things that this would allow for is that the amount of hours that they work additive, you know, so if somebody works 10 hours here and 20 hours there, those hours would add up so that if they needed to claim the benefit, it would be the total amount of hours worked that they would be receiving partial wages to cover. The bill would provide for up to 60% wage replacement for up to 12 weeks. So that 60% of wage replacement would be on their total wages. And they wouldn't be, you know, right now if somebody has a benefit at one job at the job they work for 20 hours but not at the 10-hour week job, it's a patchwork of policies. This would allow for, it's a portable benefit, which would also be a real benefit for our seasonal employees who, you know, might work someplace for 8 weeks, another place for the summer. And those, the hours worked at all of their different positions would add up over the course of their working time.
I want to remind everyone that you can join us at 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Again, the email address is exchange@nhpr.org. Here's one that came in from Will in Durham, who says, to the panel member who's opposed to the legislation, how does he wrestle with the reality that people can't afford this and it does lead to suffering? My question is genuine, does not mean to corner him, but simply focusing on the financial side, stating we can't afford it doesn't adequately address a major public policy issue. What does the panel suggest? Respectfully submitted, Will. Thank you, Will, so much. And that's to you, Representative Schmidt. And we've talked about this some, but I'd love to hear from you again. Given your concerns about the financials, what would make this better, or should New Hampshire not do this?
Again, when you represent the folks of New Hampshire from a legislative perspective, you have an obligation, really, to protect everyone in the state. We understand the issues that people have with this, and I said earlier that we are not opposed to the concept of family leave. What we do need is legislation that will address these issues and make this program work. Now, our issue, and which we have exhaustively studied, is that the legislation in front of us presently has more holes in it than Swiss cheese. And that's a problem going forward. Now, I hope the Commerce Committee will address it. But it's not that we're not compassionate. We are. But this legislation has to be designed to work for all employees, all employers, and the taxpayers in New Hampshire. There's also a significant expansion of state government to administer this program. 40 additional employees will be required in the New Jersey Insurance Department.
I remember we heard that from Keith Murphy. That sounds like a lot of people. 45 people, Representative Murphy said, to administer one program.
That number is straight from the department. And let me throw another number
from which
out.
Department? Sorry, Representative Schmidt.
Unemployment insurance. $4.5 million annual administrative costs for those 40 people are also part of this. Let me put that in perspective for our readers. That means that 16,000 New Hampshire employees will pay into this just to pay the administrative costs to administer the program.
Why? Those 45 employees does seem, I don't know anything about how many employees it really takes. I'm not a state government expert, but 45 sounded big to me, Amanda, to just run a program.
Well, 45 is only, that's a single year number of employees in the year that there
to
is
run this.
That there is, no, it's the year that there would be overlap between setting up the program and running the program. That's a peak year, and then the number of employees goes back down.
So it takes a while to get everything kind of up and running, paperwork, computers,
right.
and so forth.
So that one year where there, where the department has said it would be up to 45 employees would be a peak year. To the representative's point, you know, I appreciate the person who wrote in there, and you know, it points to the demand that we really feel from people to have this program. Representative Guile at the beginning of the hour noted that she's been introducing bills like this for 20 years. And so, you know, with due respect to Representative Schmidt, you know, saying that, you know, we might understand that people want this and that it's important, but we have to make it work. You know, we have 82% of the New Hampshire workers want this and want this to be in place, and that's actually 82% of New Hampshire people. And so it's imperative for the legislature to do the work to figure out how to make it work, because nobody wants to set up a program that doesn't work. But we want to set up a program that will work for New Hampshire, and we think there's an opportunity to do that this year. So I'm hoping that the legislature will take that opportunity and make sure that New Hampshire people have access to this program that they need.
Well, and it seems like this bill is still in the early stages, even though when you hear it passed the House, you think, wow, it's a done deal. But in fact, it still has to go through several committees. Let's take another call. This is Jill in Sandwich. Hi, Jill. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi there. How are you?
Fine.
So I am not against self-funding. However, self-funding insurance allows companies to follow ERISA laws, which were never intended for this purpose, and can the outcome can very easily wind up being a product that is hardly what anybody would want to pay for. So you have things that are covered that people don't use, or in my husband's case, he fell and broke his back. We had to pay every single penny back to the insurance company, which followed the ERISA laws and was self-funded, and they wouldn't cover anything in the future. So it was kind of like, after we were in collections, it was kind of like, what did you do for us? We had to pay back everything with the settlement, and we had no more coverage. So that has changed with the Obama, you know, injury and pre-existing thing. But self-funded insurance plans can sometimes be very dangerous.
I see what you're saying. You're talking about private plans, Jill. Is that what you're talking about? Private self-funded plans?
Well, a self-funded plan would be if the companies and businesses can opt out. And generally, if you self-fund, you have to have a pool of employees. So small companies would never be able to self-fund. And then they can self-fund with insurance companies that follow ERISA laws that were not used for this purpose. And
oh, okay.
Your panel, they could probably explain that better than I.
Yeah, and I think that this is not related, right, Amanda? I think that this is not a self-funded in the way that Jill is talking about it. This is you pay into a pool, and if you need it, you pull out your company. It's a little bit different than what she's talking about.
That's right. And I think that maybe the point at which she was thinking about self-funded is I did mention that an employer would be able to opt out of the program if they provide their own benefit.
I see.
In that case, they could self-fund. So to her point about a very small company may not choose to set up their own insurance, they may be able to opt out by having their own benefit, but not by having their own self-funded insurance program. But it's very different than what she was.
Okay, but I appreciate what she said there. All right, so that is in those instances where companies can opt out and do this self-funding setup, and then they're okay. I gotcha. Good luck to you, Jill, by the way, and thank you for the call. Here's an email from Andy. A lot of numbers in this one, but we're gonna work through it. Andy says, if 0.5% is $5 a week, then that individual is earning $1,000 a week, so they would need to contribute for 200 weeks in order to have contributed 1 week's benefit. 12 weeks takes 2,400 weeks of contributions. Andy says, is that math really sustainable? It's important to note, he says, that all of the other underfunded benefits, pensions, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, were all based on some actuaries' assurances. This gets to what I think we've been talking about a lot, and I'll turn to you first, Representative Schmidt, that, you know, despite the studies, and Representative Guile said this has been studied to death, there are concerns like the ones Andy raises that this might not pan out.
Yes, and I agree with Andy. You know, the issue we've had all along with this is we really feel that the funding is inadequate. The average wage in New Hampshire is median income is per individual is in that $1,000 range, if you know, across the whole spectrum of people who are doing it. So to take out the type of benefit, which would give you after, I believe, what, 6 months of contributions, you can pull out 60% of your salary. So you got a $600 benefit for 12 weeks. You know, and you look at it, and it all gets back to that take rate that I described
how
earlier.
Many people
how many
take advantage
people are
of
going
the
to take
benefit.
It? And when we crank the math on this, this program fails at a slightly over 6% take rate. And we believe that it will fail.
What's the path ahead for this issue in the legislature, Amanda? What do you have to do next?
Well, the Commerce Committee will be hearing this on Tuesday morning at 9:15. So we would encourage folks that want to see this program go forward to come out to that hearing. And that committee will be digging into these details, you know, hopefully hearing the demand for New Hampshire people to have this program and to have access to this kind of benefit so that they can have increased financial security when the need to take care of their loved ones arises. And so that committee will be digging into this. They'll make some decisions about whether or not amendments are needed to address some of the sustainability concerns that we've heard today. And then it will come back to the House. And so there is a long road ahead for this. There's a great deal of support. Majority of the House has supported it. The governor has said he is supportive. So I think that there is a strong road ahead. And with the demand that we see for this program and the success we see in other states, we should expect that if we keep up the call for this, that this is something that we can be providing to New Hampshire's workforce.
So it sounds like, from what I've heard from the two of you, though, that the bill that we talked about today may not be the same bill that emerges at the end of this whole process. It could be different.
That's often the case in the legislative process.
Yeah, okay. Having followed the legislative process for a long time, I hear what you're saying. Did you want to jump in real quick, Representative Schmidt?
Yeah, no doubt in my mind about it. I would expect significant changes to the bill.
Okay. Both of you, thank you so much for being here. Representative Schmidt, good to meet you. Thank you for your time.
Well, thank you for having me.
That's Stephen Schmidt, Republican representative from Wolfboro, chair of the Labor Committee. Amanda Sears, good to meet you too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Amanda Sears, director of the Campaign for a Family-Friendly Economy. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. We want to remind everyone we will be taping the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup tonight at the Barley House in Concord. So send us your questions in advance about the week's news. Exchange at nhpr.org.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.